And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Wednesday, July 24th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a share. Take one of our posts. Send it out. Share it out with all your friends. And join our Facebook page. We're trying to get more subscribers. We want more subscribers. Today on the show, it's Sports Potpourri Night. Again, as we hit the summer doldrums, we're going around the world of sports. We're going to start with the British Open, known as the Open. Xander Schauffele wins at a minus nine. He wins by two strokes over Justin Rose and Billy Horschel. It was a bogey-free six-under round on Sunday for him. To start, he was plus 1,100 to win, so nice odds. Plus 125 to finish in the top 10. And now we have the first time since 1982 that the USA holds all four majors at the same time. Obviously, Schauffele with the Open and the PGA. Scottie Scheffler with the Masters and Bryson with the US Open. Kev, why don't you start us off? Tell us a little bit about the Open.
Yeah, Schauffele was about the third or fourth choice, so it's not like it was a huge upset or anything there.
Yeah, he was third.
He was third? Yep, okay. The first two rounds, they weed out the field, of course. Some of the big names that were missed a cut, I'm just going to go into order by the scores here. My guy, Tommy Fleetwood, missed a cut. Bryson DeChambeau, missed a cut. Oberg.
My guy.
Or Aberg, as Gina likes to call him, Oberg. Missed cut. Victor Hovland, Tony Finau, Rory missed a cut. He played awful. Cam Smith, Wyndham Clark, who all of a sudden in the last couple of months has just been awful. He missed a cut. Tiger, just, he played two rounds. He looked like he was miserable out there. He opened up with, I think, a birdie on the first hole he played, had a couple of pars, and then just nothing the rest of his two rounds there. Weather was okay the first two rounds. I think if you played late Thursday, early Friday, you got the worst of the weather there, but it wasn't too bad. They go into the weekend. Shane Lowry's got the lead. He was a 2019 winner. And, by Lowry got to the eighth hole, he was at eight under par, looking like it was going to be Shane Lowry's open to lose. And in the next 11 holes, he lost it. The weather took a turn for the worse. I mean, it was pouring at times, just rain throughout the later half of the second of the Saturday of the third round there. And Lowry, got to the little par 3/8. I mean, it's only 123 yards, but they've got that darn coffin bunker right next to the hole, and he got in there, had a punch out. Wound up with double bogey. That sent him on his way to seven over on the next 11 holes. And all of a sudden, by the end of Saturday, you had Billy Horschel at four under with the lead. At three under, you had Schauffele, Burns, Rose, Lawrence, Henley, and Brown. Scheffler is sitting there at two under, and Lowry had fallen back to one under. So it's really, you had about 10 guys there going into Sunday with a chance. And what happened Sunday? Nicer weather than Saturday, that's for sure. The scores were there to be had. And really, a lot of those guys up in the top 10 played well. Bill, if you were to tell Billy Horschel, sitting there Saturday night going to Sunday, if he said, "Hey, Billy, you're going to shoot 68 today," he probably would have signed up for it.
Absolutely.
68 is embarrassing.
The top seven guys, top nine guys, except for Scheffler, all shot under par on Sunday. Scheffler went over. Everybody else was under.
Brown went 74.
Well, I'm talking about the finish, how they finished.
Oh, okay. You mean, okay. The finish, yeah. I'm thinking the 54. Yep, you're right. So he said, Schauffele, he got to the turn. He was still 200 for the day, 500 for the tournament. It was still anybody's tournament. And then Schauffele just turned it on. Four birdies on the back nine. Flawless golf. I mean, he had a couple chances for eagle there on some of the par fives. He was perfect in the back nine, and nobody was able to catch him. You know, Justin Rose put up a good battle. He shot 67. Again, he finished tied for second. Nothing wrong with what Justin Rose did. Lawrence, in his first shot here, you know, he shot a 68 also. Henley shot 69. I mean, these guys were putting up good numbers. Nobody could sit there and say they lost the Open on Saturday. Xander Schauffele went out there and won it. And you know, capped off a great year for him with his second major this year. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, he actually becomes the player. I mean, he surpasses Scheffler as the hottest player on the tour by winning the last two majors. Bogey-free, 65. Listen, there's nothing like watching the summertime in the Great Britain. The park is the freezing weather. I mean, we complain here in the Northeast when it's like 70 and a little rainy. I mean, these guys are sitting there in parkas. I mean, they're freezing out there. It's like, you know, it's crazy. Listen, it's fun golf. It's exciting. Billy Horschel, like you said, he did everything he could. He came out, shot a 68 with the lead. It just wasn't enough when Xander goes bogey free in the final round, shoots a 65. That's just what it comes out to. Gino liked Rahm and Scheffler together. They did finish in the top 10. So if you made that bet, you hit some money. My guy Hatton, by the way, also didn't make the cut. He was there at minus six with two holes to go, and he went up two over the last two. He would have barely made the cut at plus six, I should say, not minus, and kind of gave it away. But, yeah, I mean, when you break it down, outside of Brown, who was plus three, and Scheffler plus one, everybody else to finish in the top 12 were even or better on Sunday. So it was better golf, better weather. Big difference in the way that goes, you know, in the Open. The Open Championship is all about weather. It's all about wind. It's all about conditions. It's all about being able to overcome the conditions that are coming at you on this course. And that's really what really makes it kind of fun. I mean, these are the courses where you can putt from 70 feet away and all that other fun stuff from off the green because it's kind of flat. But at the same point in time, it could fall apart. Kev?
I mean, you know, you look at the usual courses in the Rota, as they call it over there, the rotation of the Open there. You know, St. Andrews, if the weather's perfect, that's an easy course for these pros. For the pros.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The old course is easy for the pros in good weather. They need the wind. They need the rain to make it difficult. And that's what you saw Saturday.
And Royal Troon doesn't even need the wind to make it that difficult. It's probably the hardest one on the circuit. When you break it down, not that we hadn't seen, you know, superstar players like Justin Leonard and Hamilton, you know, win there. But I mean, Justin Leonard's somewhat of a household guy a little bit because of Ryder Cup play and getting all excited when they came back at Brookline. But I mean, outside of that, it's scary when guys like McIlroy and DeChambeau and Fleetwood and Finau was even after day one and shot 10 over on day two to miss the cut. I mean, he shot an 81. I mean, he was even going in. He was on the leaderboard. I mean, Victor Hovland. I mean, these guys are all stars. And you know, Wyndham Clark. I mean, Tiger we're rooting for. We know he doesn't have the game anymore. But all these guys that don't make it. Oberg is this up-and-coming superstar. He's the next coming. You know, he's almost like Hovland like 2 years ago where you're just waiting for him to emerge. And these guys couldn't do a thing. And like you said, the weather was not great, but it was not awful on Thursday and Friday. It was just challenging. And, you know, the whole locations, they weren't brutal, but nobody could score. I mean, Lowry had that great run. Then he had that horrible run. And then on Sunday, he played okay to kind of get himself back into it. Horschel, who they always call one of the hardworking, nice guys on the tour, played well. He gave himself a nice top 10 finish. Again, I get sad when the majors are done. It means that, you know, like, not that the FedEx Cup doesn't mean anything. Obviously, it certainly does. But without Ryder until next year, this is kind of the end of like the season of watching all the great players play at the same time, and it's just a little disconcerting, I guess, as a golf fan. But you know, great tournament. Xander Schauffele, who was like, oh, is he ever going to win one? Now he's won two in a row. Gee.
Is it golfer of the year right now, player of the year? Is it Xander with the two majors, or is it Scottie Scheffler with the six wins and the Masters?
I'm going with Xander. I'm going with Xander because he won the last two. I know it's close.
I'm going with Scheffler right now because he won six and a major. But boy, this FedEx Cup is going to determine the player of the year.
Yeah, I think I would go with Xander. And the funny part about it is that because we don't count it the same way, but DeChambeau has had just the same year as Scheffler has. One major, lots of wins on the LIV Tour. And there's a lot of stars in that LIV Tour. It's not like there is nobody he's playing against. It's not like he's playing in the G League. I mean, you know, he's playing against guys too. He won't win it. I'm not trying to say he should, but his year is somewhat comparable statistically to what Scheffler has put up.
Okay. I think it's Scheffler right now. The six wins and the amount that he had accumulated up to that point was just unbelievable. I mean, from what we've seen prior years, we haven't really seen anybody do something like that since, you know, Tiger, basically. But, you know, we have seen other guys win two majors. Scotty's still on a run. I mean, it's not like he's played bad golf and not, you know, not made cuts and every, you know what I mean? Like, he's still been there. Listen.
The British Open, you felt like Scheffler never made a run.
No.
Never really got anywhere. And yet he finished, he shot like 70 every day.
Yeah.
Finished right around par. He never had that run to put him up in the top two or three of the leaderboard, but he was still there going into Sunday somehow.
And it's not to take anything away from Xander. I mean, two majors is just phenomenal
and
stuff.
And the other two majors, he finished seventh and eighth. So he's got
phenomenal stuff. Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Not like he hasn't been good.
No, I agree.
He finished eighth at the Masters. He finished seventh at the Open. It wasn't like he was in any way awful. He just, in fact, he beat Scheffler in three of the four majors. He had a better showing at the U.S. Open, and he won two of them. The only one he didn't beat him was the first one, which is the Masters.
At this moment, I think you can make arguments for both guys based on how you want to look at it. But listen, FedEx Cup should really determine a lot now.
Yeah.
This is one of those times where you got two people right at the top here. We're going to see what happens. So
only point is on this is that Scheffler finished 41st in the U.S. Open. Xander had four top tens and won two of them. And I'm just saying the consistency in the biggest matches and the biggest tournaments, it's so close, though. I understand why you'd say Scheffler, too. I do get it. And, you know, it was, I'm just saying Scheffler was not a factor in really any of the last two, any of the last two majors, in my opinion.
Okay. Any other golf points before we move on, guys? Kev?
Yeah, the PGA Tour also had a tournament this weekend, and the only reason I bring it up, it was the Barracuda Championship. It's the only stop on tour that uses the modified Stableford scoring system.
I hate this.
Which, for those who don't know, you get points for eagle and bogey. You know, you get positive eight for double eagle and all the way down to a negative one for double bogey or whatever. But anyway, the reason I'm bringing it up, Nick Dunlap was the winner. In case you don't remember the name, we had talked about him earlier this year. He won in January the American Express Championship as an amateur. 20 years old when he won it, was a sophomore at University of Alabama. Turned pro the next day. He now won as a pro. He becomes the first PGA Tour golfer to win as both an amateur and a professional in the same year.
That's unbelievably impressive.
If we look at his regular golf score, was it good or was it just calculation this week?
It's so calculations, hard. And it's also the fact that, you know, the top ones are over in Britain. They're over in Troon. Okay. So, you know, that plays into it. But, you know, still something to say. This kid's 20 years old and he's won twice on tour, once as a pro, once an amateur. There's still something to be said about that. He's my kid's age. And we see my kid play golf. Jeez.
He had his moments.
Yep.
More rough than good, but so did I last Friday. So there we go.
Move over to a little baseball. So we got 7 days till the trade deadline. Seems like we had some more injuries occurred the last couple of days. And we got a lot of guys coming off the IL. Just a couple from me. Ozzy Albies out 8 weeks with a fractured wrist. Max Fried went on the IL with forearm neuritis. Remember, the Braves also have lost Acuña and Strider, so they're down. I got them as buyers at the trade deadline next week.
They have to be at this point.
Well, I can't imagine they're not going to be, but Darren?
No, I mean, Braves coming into tonight, 3-7 in their last 10. You know, it's just, this is a team that had a pretty substantial lead in the wild card, much like the Yankees, which we'll talk about later. And it's dwindled away. And I know you said last week you think it's going to be a quiet trade deadline, Gino. You think it's going to be more active. Whatever it is, it's going to be a great seller's market because there just aren't that many teams involved. So I think that the sellers are going to be able to call their price if somebody's really trying to buy and trying to get something. I think we're going to see better prospects going or better money coming out this year just because I don't think there's enough teams that are definitely sellers at this point. Jay?
Yep.
So Kev made the point that he thought it would be quiet, and I said I didn't think it was going to be quiet.
Yeah, exactly.
And based on what you said, I still don't think it's going to be quiet because you got 7-8 sellers out there, and you got a dozen buyers. And when that happens, you usually get movement. I don't know how many players are going to go, but I'm thinking you're going to get 10, 12 players of name go somewhere in the day or two leading up to 7/31. So any other IL guys? Yeah, you guys want to bring
Yelich might be out for the year. I mean, that's a big blow. He's second in the league in hitting coming in now. He obviously won't qualify going forward, but he was a guy that was really making good contact. Brewers came back and won a game tonight, but that's a blow for the Brewers. He's a guy that's been hitting the crap out of the ball.
For the Mets, it's Christian Scott on the IL. They're saying maybe it's just a UCL sprain and, you know, hoping back by the end of the year. But, boy, you hear UCL, you always think Tommy John. And, you know, thank God we held it 75 pitch against the Pirates a couple weeks ago. So you know, when he was pitching well, so that we save his arm.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, I know Gino agrees with all this crap, but me and Kev don't. I'm teasing you, Gino.
Enough with the damn pitch count. Let the guys pitch. They're all done blow out their arms
Gino's,
anyway.
All Gino has ever said, by the way, as much as I pick on him about this, is that this is the way the game is played now. Get over it. And me and Kevin are like, we don't like it this way. Gino's I don't either, but it's the way it's done. It's kind of a funny argument.
Yeah, I know.
There is no argument. I'm just giving you what's going on.
I mean, listen, we all know what's going on. You're stating the obvious. But I get it. I agree. Yeah, it's just frustrating. But yeah, Jeff, I mean, that's another major injury that I've seen.
You had mentioned about Trout.
Yeah, Trout. He was playing a rehab game tonight. He's out after the second inning. Who knows what his status is going to be? Boy, this is how many straight years now with Trout, just with the injuries. I mean, he can't stay healthy anymore. No. I mean, this is going on, what, 5-6 years in a row?
It's almost like Ken Griffey Jr. at the end of the career, so to speak. It seemed like every year he just got banged up. Yeah. And it's just a shame when you watch someone that you think is special that just you never get to see Trout in the playoffs because he just don't make it. And Jr. you saw a little bit. But once Jr. went to Cincinnati, you really didn't see him make the playoffs either. And he would just get banged up every freaking year, I should say. And it was sad because you love watching these great players.
That's a good comparison, Darren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. At least Junior had a couple of playoff appearances there. Trout, you know, still looking for his first one, if I remember right, right?
Yeah, yep. we've never gotten the same. And it's a shame. That's why Ohtani left.
We also have some IL players coming back. So Kershaw, Robbie Ray, hopefully Senga tomorrow.
He should
right?
be back Friday.
Friday, excuse me, yeah. So we got some guys coming back off the IL, some guys going on the IL. Anything on Mets, Yankees? Darren, want to talk a couple of minutes about Yankees? We'll talk Yankees, Mets for a couple minutes.
Well, yeah, I mean, Kev will get into it. The Mets have won all four games versus the Yankees this year, so a sweep for the Mets. And as I make fun of my Mets fan friends who celebrate championships in July. But you know what? You got to take solace when you win, so you take it when you can. Yankees can't hit. I mean, let's be honest. If Soto and Judge don't hit, they don't win. And they pitched around the first game of this series. The Mets tried to let the Yankees win. They brought in Diekman. He had to close the game out in the ninth. Can't pitch the righties. I don't know if he was supposed to pitch to Judge or not, but he struck him out after Judge had been pitched around the entire evening. It was
four
just
walks.
Four walks and a K. And you know what? That was his only shot at it. Soto, you know, same thing. He did not have a good night last night. If those guys don't hit, there's nothing from this team right now. And, you know, J.D. Davis batting fourth last night. What the hell is Boone doing? You know, this is on Boone and Cashman. Because right now the Yankee fan is sitting there hanging on to Stanton. Like, oh, we're going to get Stanton back. A guy that they were saying, we better not guarantee a spot in the lineup to before the season started. A guy every Yankee fan was saying, he's been awful. He gets injured too much. We don't want him. Now they're praying for him. They're banking on Jason Dominguez, who we saw for, 2 months last year? When he gets back, we'll have an offensive player. This team has regressed offensively. And, again, it comes from the top. There's no order. When you watch the Mets versus the Yankees, you see a lineup on the Mets that is pretty complete top to bottom. I mean, you see a lineup on the Yankees that is not. Volpe's an up-and-down player. Verdugo has been awful for a while now. Rice got off to a good start. Now he's slumping. Gino loves LeMayu, but I don't know. I don't know if you can keep hanging your hat on him, G. I'm joking. Torres hasn't been good. I mean, this is a team that is just – they're missing a lot of offense. Do I think the offense will start to turn around? I do. But the fact of the matter is that even when they do have a one-run lead in a big spot, do I think they can get out of it with Clay Holmes at the end and Luke Weaver in the 8 and the 9? You can't. They're not good enough in the 8th and the 9th. So there's so many problems with the Yanks. And again, if it's not Judge or Soto, this team just doesn't hit the ball, and it's a major problem. On the other side of town in Queens, Kev, good things are happening.
Well, the Yankees obviously solved their problems winning the last two games. I mean, they came out of the All-Star break. They split with Miami, who, geez, they can never beat Miami. We were talking about it before we started on the show here, going back to Tom Glavin not being able to beat the Marlins, going back to Luis Castillo just owning the Mets before he came to the Mets.
Him and Juan Pierre would just get on, steal bases all over the place, and score.
Yeah. Jose Fernandez, rest in peace there, always killed the Mets. I mean, it was just no matter what happened, the Marlins just have the Mets number. I don't care who plays for them, what year it is, how good the Mets are, the Marlins just kill them. I mean, after the game last night, you know, last 5 or 6 games, the Mets were 5 for 55 with runners in scoring position. You're not going to win games that way. Nope. Tonight, they were able to hit some home runs and you know, were able to beat up the Yankees a little bit there.
They made it all effort.
Yeah. But I tell you, like you said, you know, you compare the lineups, you know, you've got, if you compare the two teams, you know, Judge and Soto are 1 and 2. Are 3 through 11 Mets players?
Probably.
Right. I mean,
and Lindor and McNeil aren't that far behind the way they. I'm just saying they're playing well.
Yeah.
You don't expect to say that about McNeil, but he is hitting.
You know, this is a former Benning champion. And, you know, Nimmo's gotten a little cold. Alvarez has been cold, but now McNeil's starting to heat up a little bit. You know, they've been having enough guys who are picking up other guys lately that the offense has been good enough. No, they had a scorching June. It's been a little, you know, hit or miss here in July. The rotation, despite not giving you depth, has been serviceable. They're keeping in games. The bullpen, I mean, it's crapshoot every night. I mean, like I said, Diekman. I mean, every Mets fan figured Judge was hitting a 2-run home run there last night.
He doesn't get righties out. He doesn't get righties out. He doesn't throw strikes. But besides that, he's the perfect guy.
I mean, to strike out Judge looking, it was like, oh my gosh. You know, Mets obviously need at least one, if not two relievers here at the deadline. And, you know, if one nitpick, maybe another left-handed hitting outfielder to replace DJ Stewart and Ben Gamel on the roster. But again, they're not going to overpay for anybody right now. I don't think they're going to go out and try to make a starter. They're going to ride with, you know, these guys are going to give them 5 or 6 innings and hope they build enough of a bullpen. And you know, get one of the 3 wild card spots, which they are in right now. And, they've got couple of games with the Braves coming up here. Hopefully catching the Braves at the right time. You know, with Albiz and Acuna and Freed and Strider out. Maybe this is the Mets' chance to close the gap even more on the Braves. We'll see.
Yeah, the Mets are at the high watermark, 500 right now for the season. You know, listen, you look at it, the last 10, right, in the NL East, Braves 3-7, Phillies 4-6, Mets 7-3, going into today. So, and the AL East, as bad as the Yankees are playing, Boston 4-6, Baltimore 3-7, Yankees 5-5 going into today. So it's
they
like
gain game ground.
they gain ground and they've almost been unwatchable. Yankees, Gino, I don't know if you feel the same way. A lot of one-sided games, whether they win them or lose them. You're not in a lot of real great games, cliffhanger kind of games with the Yankees this year. I mean, even the Tampa series, they win 9-1, they lose 9-3. I mean, it's like they just aren't in games. Or they blow you out. They score all their runs in one game, and then the other two games of the series, they ain't doing crap.
And most of those games have to do with Soto and Judge showing offensive threats. Because the games that they don't show up as an offensive threat, and when I say that, I mean, you know, Soto's getting two hits, but it could be a single and a double. But when Judge and Soto hit, I feel like this team scores plenty of runs. When they don't, I feel like the whole rest of the team just does nothing.
They have nobody hitting. And the Mets 7-3, by the way, is tied for the second best record over the last 10. Arizona also 7-3. The Pittsburgh Pirates have been 8-2 in the last 10 and playing some pretty good ball. They've gotten themselves back in the race. Everybody seems like there's seven or eight teams, like you said before, Gino, about the trade deadline that are done. Everybody else, even like a team like the Tigers, has played well enough to get themselves back into shouting distance. You know, I don't believe that they're going to win the AL Central, but, you know, you never know what happens. And then you hear at the same time a guy like Tarik Skubal, who's could be dealt. I mean, and this is a guy that's having an amazing year. If you look at Skubal, 11-3 with a 2.34 and a 0.92 whip. I mean, you know, every team would want him, you know, and I don't know if Detroit sells now because they got hot a little bit here at the end. Pittsburgh playing really well. Interesting team could be Cincinnati because they are still back. Are there a couple guys? Can India get dealt? They're not going to deal De La Cruz. They're not going to deal Steer. You know, there's certain guys that won't go, but there are a few others that could easily go on this team. You know, it's kind of crazy. And what I mentioned before about the Red Sox and the Orioles losing, they both lost again today also. Orioles lose to the Marlins, just like the Mets. So it makes the Mets feel a little bit better. And the Red Sox give up 20 to the Rockies today. So now there are only two teams in Major League Baseball that scored 20 runs this season. Can you name the two teams? One's easy because it happened
Colorado.
Do you know who the other team is? Oakland.
Oakland, that's right. Wow. Last week, yeah.
Oh, it's like these are the two teams that are out of it are the only two teams that have scored 20 in a game. So you get those stats up here. But it's wide open, and I think there are a lot of buyers out there. I think that the sellers are going to be able to hold up and really be able to get a little bit more than usual as we get to the deadline. I just think that, you know, that a lot of people are competing for relief pitching.
Yeah.
A lot of people are competing for that extra outfielder, a power arm out of that pen, like we said, maybe an extra starter. No, the Mets probably could use one. You know, the Yankees could certainly use arms in the pen. You know, there's all these teams could. So baseball is going to be really interesting here at the deadline for the next 6 days.
I wonder, because there are so many buyers, if that convinces one of these teams that is below 500 and not necessarily out of the race to be out of the race because they can get such a good price for some of these players. I wonder if that may occur. We're going to see it. We'll see next week as we get close to the deadline, if that actually happens. So any other baseball points, guys?
Just a couple quickies. Yeah. Houston in the lead in the AL West. Seattle went 2-8 in the last 10. Just to, you know, and Houston, who Kevin pointed out last week, was like, you look up and they're one out. Now they're up. Minnesota and Kansas City are playing real well. They've actually eaten into the Cleveland lead, cut that to five. Even Detroit playing well. So, I mean, they're still 9.5 back, but still a while to go. Atlanta and St. Louis both have had struggles, like we said. So St. Louis now, their lead in the wild card is nothing special. The Mets are right there with them. The Pirates are right there with them. The Padres are right there with them. Arizona is right there with them. And there's a bunch of other teams right behind. And like you said, you know, we're less than a week away to this trade deadline. So it's going to be exciting. Couple of interesting stats. Just the guys that are just under the radar but still having really good years. So Jordan Alvarez hitting .301 with 20-54. On base at .386. OPS at .932. Solid season. Alex Bohm, .296. 11-71. It's like the Tommy Herr year where he hit 8-108. Remember that? Yeah. .350 on base. .825 OPS. Alec Burleson, no one really talking about him, hitting .293 in St. Louis, 18-59, .323 on base, so not the best, .820 OPS. And Brent Rooker on the great Oakland A's squad, yeah, .290, but no protection in that lineup for him, yeah. 22-67, homers and ribbies, .368 on base, .939 OPS, having a great year. On the other side of it, you know, we talked about the top pitchers for a while, but we haven't mentioned him a lot, but Corbin Burnes, has been great. He's 10-4 with an ERA of .238. What?
Corbin Burnes.
It's Burnes, isn't it?
It's not Burnes. It's Burnes.
It's Burnes.
It's not Burnes.
It's Burnes. It's 104. Burnes will just have an S. Aaron Nola, 11-4 with a .354 and a .104 whip. Tarik Skubal, we mentioned before, 11-3 to .234 ERA with a .92 whip. And Ronel Blanco, we've mentioned once or twice only because of the no-hitter type stuff, but 9-5 with a .275 with a .99 whip. So you have these guys just under the radar, but they all could, with a great August and September, could all propel themselves into the MVP race. Corbin Burnes. Back to you, G.
Four players were inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame last week. We're not going to go into details, but Adrian Beltre, Joe Mauer, Todd Helton, and Jim Leland got inducted.
And only Leland to me is a surefire one. I got to be honest. Mauer's career wasn't long enough. He was a good player. Helton with the Colorado thing, let's be honest. Adrian Beltre, I never watched him and said, wow, this guy's a Hall of Famer. I'm just saying, I know, I think it's become the very good awards and not the great awards. Kev, I don't know if you agree or disagree. Gino, I don't either.
I agree.
Beltre is the Don Sutton of position players.
Absolutely. I know. He basically accumulated stats all the way through. I get it. I just never saw him and thought he was great.
Yep.
The HBO documentary started tonight. It's 2 hours tonight, 2 hours tomorrow night, 4 one-hour episodes called Charlie Hustle and the Matter of Pete Rose. Next week or the week after, we'll talk about it after we've seen all four episodes. We'll see how that turns out. Something tells me he's not inducted into the Hall of Fame, but we'll double check to make sure that that didn't happen while we were on the air. Okay.
All he had to do was admit he gambled on baseball. He would have been inducted already, but he's a stubborn liar. Love the guy, though.
NFL news. So Hard Knocks episode 4 was Tuesday night. Big thing with this offseason, this was when the NFL draft occurred. So this episode is them prepping, the Giants prepping for the draft, and then the actual draft itself happening. At least the first round up to their pick, to the sixth pick. Interesting point that came out for me is that Joe Shane really may have made a trade for a quarterback if the Patriots were interested in trading out of number 3. Once he knew the day before, because they have him on the call with the Patriot GM saying that they're going to basically stay put. At that point, his whole point to Mara was, we want either Harrison or Malik Nabers, and we're hoping both of those don't go in the 4-5 slot. And if they do, we may be trading down. So that actually was interesting. That came out. Obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr. was the 4, and then Joe Alt went to the Chargers at 5, so Malik Nabers was there. basically it was an easy pick for them once Ault got selected. That's it. I mean, you know, it's I like it, but again, I say this every week as I say it. It's just the fact that it was 4 months ago is just, you know, it's hard to get yourself back into, oh, it's the draft, you know. Any other NFL points before we move on, guys?
Well, we're still sitting there with a bunch of guys that are looking for new contracts and not playing. So, you know, Reddick on the Jets stands out. Jets make the deal for this guy, and they're obviously not prepared for what they should have been prepared for. He's looking for about $25 to $28 million. He's scheduled to make 16. Hopefully they're able to come to an agreement. I mean, I don't really get it. CeeDee Lamb still hanging out. Dak waiting for a new contract. Ayuk won't play. Trent Williams sitting out. I mean, there's a lot of players that are sitting out right now. It's early in training camp. I mean, they're just getting there. You know, Rodgers had to deal with the whole thing about him going to Egypt when he should have been at the mandatories. At the same point in time, he was at the optional ones the whole time. Jets apparently fined him for going to Egypt. I really don't care. As long as the guy stays, if he plays eight plays, it's double last season. I'm hoping for 8 games, maybe 10. Let's see what we get. But I'm anxious to see it. I'm ready for football to kind of come around. I'm pretty excited about it. And, you know, we'll start getting see the training camp updates already. So hopefully we'll be able to kind of touch on that a little bit more next week and see who's coming out good on some of these, who's playing well, top rookies and for the locals and stuff like that. Any other points in the NFL?
Yeah. The other thing that came out this week was Lamar Jackson was sent home from practice. What they said was a bad illness. We really have no idea or any other information on that. So we'll wait to see what happens with that. All right, let's move on. We're going to touch on the Olympics. So the 33rd Summer Olympics opening ceremony is Friday. Olympics start 7:26, end 8:11. It's in Paris, France. This is going to be the first opening ceremony that's not in a stadium. It's going to be held along the 3.7-mile stretch of the Seine River. And there's going to be boats for all of the national delegations. 329.
I couldn't agree more.
Excellent point, Gino.
Sorry,
Gino, are you playing the role of Kevin? What do we got going on here?
Sorry, I my audio just kicked out for a sec. 329 medals will be crowned across 39 sports with 206 national teams. And by the way, the next Summer Olympics is 4 years from now, 2028 in Los Angeles. Any Olympic points, guys?
Well, the winter in 2034 has been given to Salt Lake City.
I saw that.
So that's one thing.
On the condition they can take it away if the U.S. doesn't agree to whatever the World Anti-Doping Agency is doing with their testing thing. So.
Well, we'll see what happens. I know Kev has a point. I'm just going to make two quickies. So they had a soccer match. Soccer has started. Even though the opening ceremonies don't start till Friday, some of the sports have already kicked off. Argentina scored a late goal against Morocco. The Moroccan fans charged the field. You know, already security issues. Australian team members have been robbed already. We have some security issues in Paris. Hopefully they get that fixed. You've had, you know, several years to prepare for this. You should be able to build a cocoon around this and protect these athletes. It's not something that we don't need Munich 72 all over again with any kind of casualties or any kind of crazy things. But that's a little bit scary. Those are the two things that I take from before. But Kev's got more.
That Morocco-Argentina was interesting because they've decided to make sure they have enough stoppage time. They actually put up 15 minutes of stoppage time. At the end of the game.
It's utterly ridiculous.
And
wow.
It got to the 16th minute when Argentina scored in the 16th minute of stoppage time. And the Moroccan fans were ticked off the fact that they thought it was going to be 15 minutes, and that's why they stormed the field. It took them an hour and a half to clear the stadium. They went to VAR. They disallowed the goal because the Argentinian player was offside. The players come back out. They rewarm up. 2 hours after the game is interrupted, they come back out there and play the last minute or two. And Morocco actually wins that game 2-1.
Wow.
But the point I wanted to make, the flag bearers were named. I didn't catch who the female one was, but LeBron James is carrying the American flag in for the Olympic, for the opening ceremony.
So the same guy that kneeled for the flag?
And taking that out of it, I don't like LeBron James, so maybe this is the first time I'm noticing it, and maybe it's happened in past Olympics. I hate the idea of a pro athlete carrying the flag in. I don't care who the pro athlete is. The Olympics are every 4 years. What about, I'd rather see the swimmer, the Greco-Roman wrestler, a volleyball player, somebody from team handball, somebody who the Olympics that happens once every 4 years is their one moment in their entire life. Let one of them have a chance of carrying the flag and bring some notoriety to their sport and to that individual. LeBron James, we hear about 365 days a year. LeBron James, or any pro athlete, this is not, you know, like I said, LeBron is the one that's the poster child for it right now. And that's why, like I said, maybe that's why it's in my conscience, but no pro athlete needs to be carrying the flag in for the Americans in any Olympics. It needs to be one of these less popular sports that is, you only recognize every fourth year. You know, in the Winter Olympics, let a loser, let a curling guy, let somebody like that in and let them carry the flag. We don't need a hockey player carrying the flag in the Winter Olympics.
I honestly just don't like the fact that someone that has been anti the flag is carrying the flag.
That also plays into
bother to me. Let someone that wants to be on the U.S. Olympic team, literally for the right reasons, carry the flag in. And I agree, it should be an amateur. It should be somebody that is not from a major sport. I don't care if you have an equestrian person coming in. Doesn't matter to me. Let's just get somebody in there that deserves it. Track and field, great. Swimming, fantastic. Doesn't matter. Even an amateur boxer would be fine. But yep. Take the NBA guys because they're the most popular, stop. It's a joke.
I like Kev's idea. I mean, it should be a non-professional athlete who's doing this because this is their one chance of being in the spotlight is the Olympics. And I completely agree.
I'm shocked. That's my only Olympic point. That's my rant. Okay. I'm done.
All right. Any other points anyone has before we wrap this up tonight?
Well, just one thing. I just want to read something to you guys from Miroslav Klose, who was a great German soccer player. Okay. And here, I'm just going to read this directly from him. I stopped playing football because I no longer recognized it. Today, young players think about other things. As a child, I only thought about training and becoming someone in the sport that I always loved. At Lazio and in the national team, after each training session, I put myself in a bathtub full of ice to avoid injuries. But young players systematically refused to do this. Okay. When they saw me picking up bags of balls to put them away at the end of training, they said to me, "But who tells you to do that?" At that moment, I said to myself, "You're 20 years old and you can't help a 60-year-old worker." They care more about the weather. They care more about whether their boots go with their socks. That's why I said, stop. The football I knew no longer exists. Today, young players think of first of cars and contracts with their sponsors and their new boots. If it is only after all these things that football comes for them, their image is the most, and for them, their image is the most important thing. Whereas for me, all that mattered was football in its purest form. So I just wanted to read this out because we talk so much about how the American sport isn't the same as it was. Obviously, soccer has changed the same way in the European scale, the same way we think about it on the American scale with football and baseball and basketball. And, you know, you do appreciate the warrior and the old-time player that really would do everything he could for his team. And we still have guys like that. I mean, listen, we talked about Jalen Brunson last week, you know, about his contract and trying to do things to put teammates ahead of himself and try to make the team better. And, you know, you always admire guys like Derek Jeter, but also not just New Yorkers, but other great players all around the world, so to speak, and all around the country. It's just a different mindset for the athlete today. They get money at an earlier age. They get pampered at an earlier age. And they get, you know, we saw with the NBA draft, the two guys that can't create their own shot that are the top two picks because, you know, we think that there might be something, but we have no idea if they could really do it. So I just thought that was kind of a cool thing when I read that from Close. The other thing, Tom Thibodeau gets an extension from the Knicks, so the Knicks lock him up for a little bit more. And Aaron Judge gifted, Jalen Brunson today, throughout the first pitch of the Yankee-Met game, cleats, which said, "Keep running this city." Basically handing over the torch as the king of New York from Judge to Brunson. If Judge had homered last night off Diekman, maybe he didn't do it, but maybe he just felt the need to do that today. I thought it was pretty cool. And just so the Met fans don't get upset, Brunson, even though he wore a Yankee jersey when he threw it out, was hanging out with Lindor a little bit before the game as well. I think he's just making friends with everybody.
Yep.
That's pretty much all I got. You guys have anything else?
Nope.
All right, we're going to wrap this one up. We're the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin here with Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports, a wacky world where the Yankees cannot be competitive at all anymore. It's unbelievable after the start that they had. Anyway, please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be, you know, Spotify, whether it be an Apple product, whatever you like. And, you know,
Viva La France!
Viva La France. And, you know, Gino is going to be, doing reports from the Aquatic Center starting next week. But, yeah, follow us on social media. We haven't posted a lot lately because there hasn't been much. But you'll start seeing a real ramp up on this with baseball getting closer to the finish line, as well as football starting up and college football and all that fun stuff and the Olympics. And without any further ado, let athletes that are amateur carry the flag in, according to Kev, and may your sports be with you.